Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, August 24th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. I hope you're doing well.
I am. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. And also, special guest today from Tech Review, Jim Tanis. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you here.
Well, and every time Brian leaves, I get to come in and do something fun. So it's great for me.
And it's great for me, too, because I always love it when you're around and you're a fantastic writer. I loved it when you worked for us all the time. And I was really excited when you started up the Tech Review site. And the best of both worlds, every now and then you get to come out or come back over and write a few stories for us. Totally awesome. So thank you. You're
my pleasure.
And Jim, we can tell you're in the field from the sound of your mic. You're not at home, but that's okay. We hear you quite well.
Thank you. I hope the listeners can put up with a little bit lower audio quality on my end today.
Well, they put up with me every single day. So I don't think you have anything to worry about.
All right. Well, the condition for you, Jeff.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, good point. Hey, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the show today, Jim, is because you did a really great follow-up to the OnHub discussion. Now, Dave Hamilton and I, we talked about OnHub last week. This is Google's just-announced product that's going to be like an all-in-one thing. It's going to be a self-configuring Wi-Fi router for your network, and then it also has some protocols built in so that it can do smart home, smart bridge stuff, there we go, for companies that use the specific platforms that it supports, which sounds really cool. And on paper, this looks like a really interesting product. And of course, we don't know how it's going to work when it's actually in the wild, because no one has one yet. And you have some ideas, Jim, and I really like what you're saying. So why don't you tell our listeners just exactly what your perspective is on this?
Sure. So just to be clear up front, OnHub is an exciting product. It's an interesting product because it's attempting to take a lot of the technologies that made Wi-Fi very good but were manually configured and put them into an automated package. But the reason I'm concerned is after looking at Google's advertising for it. And if you go to the OnHub website, they've got a nice video. They've got a lot of pictures and descriptions of how it's going to help your life. And the video in particular is focused a lot on buffering. They show a lot of scenarios where a baby's watching something on the iPad and suddenly it buffers, as we're all familiar with. And somebody's trying to talk to grandma on Skype and it buffers. They're watching a movie and it freezes. And that's a different, in my mind, a much different situation than just having a poorly configured router. Because absolutely, yes, a poorly configured router can cause, buffering because you don't have it properly set up with the right specification, the antennas aren't pointed right, you're too far away, whatever. But most of the time, users, they have a good network or they have a good Wi-Fi connection, and the buffering happens because it's on the ISP end. And there's nothing in the world that a router, at least unless Google comes up with something fantastic that we can't even think of, like bridging multiple cellular connections to supplement it or something. But in general, a router is not going to be able to solve your ISP issues. And that's really the biggest challenge that, at least in this country, in the United States, that we face, is lack of competition, lack of choice when it comes to broadband internet. And the networks are overburdened, and up until the FCC stepped in, companies were slowing down traffic to certain sites like Netflix and what they consider to be bandwidth hogs. That's the problem, and that's what's going to cause most of your buffering issues. And so for me, seeing Google make this an issue about buffering is kind of misleading, because if you go out and you're an average consumer and you buy this OnHub, it's not going to solve your buffering issues unless you just had the worst configured Wi-Fi network in the world.
Which probably isn't likely.
Right. I'm sure you're going to find some test case out there where that's the case. But you're right. I mean, if your connection was always buffering, you would have got a new router already. You would have moved closer. You would have done something. The buffering comes up because you're using your laptop or your tablet in the location you normally use it. So it's generally working. And then every night around 6 p.m. when everybody gets home and the network gets congested, you know, that's when your Netflix stops. And again, that's not going to be your router necessarily. The router is an important component of that. But the main issue there is on your back end, whether it's your DSL or your office Wi-Fi or your office fiber connection, cable modem, whatever it is there. That's where the problem lies.
So it sounds to me like Google may be setting itself up for a black eye in this case. Regardless of how cool OnHub is and how well implemented the device is, if they're pushing this on people as a solution for the ISPs not getting data to them fast enough, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a shame because I personally would love to see a product like this succeed. I think it's what they claim to want to do, no other router company has done. And Google has already hinted that they're opening this up to additional enhancements in the future. They haven't specified what those are, but you know, that's exciting because Google's a big company with a lot of interesting ideas, and to see what they could do with it is great. But I'd hate for it to get out there and those first few batches get out to average consumers who have poor network bandwidth at home, and it doesn't help. And then now all of a sudden the ratings are, you know, 1 and 2 stars, and there's a bunch of articles being written at The Verge and Gawker, and you know, this is misleading and it's not helping and it's no better than a, you know, standard router. So it's just really, it's not the product itself. It's the marketing. It's the way they're framing it and the way they're advertising it thus far. And I think hopefully, or I hope that they will change that marketing, that they'll focus more on what it can do for you compared to a normal router versus it's just going to solve all your networking problems, which is virtually impossible.
Jim, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think our Apple customer readers will wholesale dump their Airport Expresses and jump on this bandwagon to a significant effect? Or do you think they'll say, hey, there's nothing wrong with my Airport Express, it's working, or my Airport Extreme, it's working fine, I don't need a new device, and I don't trust Google, so I'm just going to sit pretty?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the trust issue, because that is certainly a concern, and Google immediately came out and they have a page up where they're detailing exactly what this router is going to do. And then, so of course, some security researchers came out and said, hey, you know, by the way, I know you're afraid about this router, but if you're using Google's DNS servers, they already know everything they need to know anyway. So that's the one issue, the one side of it that will probably dissuade some consumers. But if you've got an Airport Express or an Airport Extreme or whatever, Time Capsule, and it's working and you get pretty decent coverage in your home, there's no need to upgrade your router at all. So, because right now the benefit of the OnHub as they're advertising it now, and again, we're only going off what they say it's going to be. We haven't got one in our hands yet, is that it's automated configuration. So you go into a crappy network situation where you've got lots of competing networks and you've got a wide area to cover, and it's going to do the beamforming, which is sort of like where the device detects the location and angle of where your wireless device is.
To be fair, though, the new Airport Extreme also does beamforming.
Yes, it does beamforming, and beamforming is generally an automatic thing in most routers, but it's going to do beamforming. It's going to do automatic boosting of the signal, because in Wi-Fi routers, higher power does not necessarily mean better. So it's about getting the right level of power. So that's going to do that, and the airport does not do that. In order to do that, you usually have to do something manual on an Asus or a D-Link or something, or a Linksys, and it's going to set the channel automatically. And now a lot of routers claim to do automatic channel detection, including the Airport Extreme and Airport Express, but they're not very good at it. They're actually terrible at it. There's a bunch of articles out there. I think AnonTech has one. Extreme Tech had one out there, PC Perspective, and they've done tests where they say, okay, you do your quote automatic channel configuration to pick a less congested channel, and then they'll go back after it's done and manually measure the channels. And more often than not, most routers that did it automatically picked a far less than optimal channel. So this claims to be smarter than that. And then on top of all of that routing stuff where it's all kind of plug and play and easy to understand and you don't have to do anything, it's just going to configure itself. It also brings to the table the foundation for Bluetooth connectivity and the home automation stuff, which I think you guys talked about last week with Dave. And that's interesting, and it could be extremely valuable, but only for customers who are interested in home automation and only for customers who are interested in home automation on Google's platform. So those are the caveats. And so I don't see if you've got a current generation AirPort Extreme, which is a couple years old now, the 2013, I don't see you running out and throwing it out the window and going to pick this one up unless you're having serious network problems or unless you really want to experiment with the home automation stuff and whatever features Google adds to it in the future. Because the AirPort Extreme is not a good value anymore. It's $200. It's the same cost as this OnHub. And you can get routers with better performance, better range for less. But that's just the symptom of Apple putting technology out there 2 years ago, which is ancient in our industry, and then leaving it for that long. So
I'll add that to my checklist.
But even with this two-year-old technology, I think Apple could do a lot to reinvigorate the AirPort Extreme and the AirPort Express with a software update, because there's a lot of features that both of those devices are capable of supporting if Apple gave us the ability to do so.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a light ring.
Right.
No, it doesn't have a light ring. But
it doesn't have a light ring.
Trip to IKEA and you can pick something up and add it on and you're good to go.
As long as we never see Google's red ring of death, we're okay.
Yeah. I mean, there and your point though is good, Jeff, that of course they could do something in software, but they are a little bit limited. The chipset that Apple's using for the 802.11ac is now 2 years old. There've been three revisions of that chipset since that product launch. The antenna technology, I'm sure, has had at least some improvement in it. And what Apple wouldn't want to add, or what customers would want Apple to add, are features that enable more control, sort of like the very famed DDWRT firmware for the Linksys routers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do a whole heck of a lot on these routers, which are mini computers, basically. And you can do all kinds of things like advanced VPN servers and firewalls. And I'm sure that the hardware in the Apple routers can handle that, but they'd have to open it up and they'd have to grant users a level of freedom that they've never granted them before, or at least not in the modern era of Apple. And I don't see them doing that. I think we're going to have to wait for a hardware revision, which will, of course, come. Unless they just want to abandon this field altogether. But eventually we'll get something, and it'll come with new features in addition to that new hardware.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like to fantasize about a world where Apple pushes out a software update to me, which then I have to tell the AirPort Express or AirPort Extreme, go ahead and install. And then when it's done, it's like I have a brand new device that is far more flexible and far more useful. I love my AirPort Extreme, but I wish I could do more with it.
Well, see, Jeff, what you got to do is go out. I don't even know if they still include them, but how they used to include the little Apple logo stickers in all the Mac boxes?
Yeah.
They still do.
Go get those and just slap them on a Linksys. And it's the same thing, I'm told. It's like, you put an Apple logo on it and suddenly it's magic.
Oh, well, good to know. I'm going to go break out my Apple stickers right now.
There you go.
Jim, the reason I want to get my hands on an OnHub is because I want to see how it handles IPv6. I have heard nothing about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. They haven't mentioned that, but I can't imagine it wouldn't have full compliance because...
Same here. I can't imagine.
That's a standard that's... as you know, John, you did some excellent reporting on that a few years ago, and I encourage everyone who's unfamiliar with IPv6 to go search the Mac Observer. Maybe we can put them in the show notes here. Because John did a real good deep dive into what it is and how to configure it on your cable modem and all that. But it's been around for a couple of years now, and it's not available in every market yet in terms of the consumer facing side of it. Your DSL, your cable modem provider may not have it implemented in your system yet, but it's out there. And so I would be shocked if they didn't have full compliance.
Yeah, same here.
I would be very surprised too. Hey, we are getting a little short on time, and there's another thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on from both of you. So we're going to do that, even though there's so much more we could be talking about here. But the thing is, Swatch CEO has said that that Apple Watch is a toy, and that's got a lot of people like all up in arms because, well, if you're spending at least $350 on a watch, and then to have someone from another company say, "Oh, it's just a toy," that kind of pisses people off. But the other thing is that along with his description of Apple Watch, the CEO also talked about the plans that Swatch has for the smartwatch market. And based on what he said, what's his name? Ed Hayek? Is that right? He said that Swatch is looking at intelligent watches or smarter watches, but that they're not going to be these all-inclusive feature sets with all this extra connectivity like we see in the Apple Watch and we see
because he doesn't know how to do it. It's because he doesn't know how to do it. He goes to his Apple engineers. It's like a Dilbert cartoon. He says, "We need to build a smartwatch to compete with the Apple Watch." And the Dilbert engineer says, "But sir, we don't know how to do that."
Well, what he says, which could be spin, is that the current crop of smartwatches just aren't what customers need. What they need is something that has much longer battery life, is truly waterproof, and has just the features that they need and not everything else. And so that does not include a lot of connectivity. Basically, what he described, I'm referring to as a smart-ish watch.
Yeah, you do what you know how to do.
Right. And what he's describing is essentially just an extension of one of the watches they've already designed, which is geared towards volleyball players. So it's a fitness tracking watch. Yay. With a specific market. Now, the next version that comes out, which, by the way, isn't coming out until the Olympics next year in Rio de Janeiro. So we still have many, many months for competitors to continue taking up bits of the market. But this next watch is going to be much like the one that's already out, where it does specialized or focused fitness tracking, is what it sounds like. And then it's also going to have some sort of NFC technology in it so that it can also work as your credit card payment system, much like Apple Pay does, but at the same time not like Apple Pay, because you're not going to have that connectivity that we get with Apple Pay. So it sounds like what they're going to do really is more like putting a credit card smart chip in there that you can then load your credit card data on. So it's not going to be secure in the way that Apple Pay is, where it's just totally tokenized, but instead will be secure in the way that using your credit card with a smart chip in it would be.
Guaranteed winner, right? I have some thoughts on this.
Okay.
First of all, Mr. Hayek was not wise to use the word toy, because this is the mantra of the IT managers throughout the years who accuse the Macintosh of being a toy, a Unix-based, high-level processor, BSD Unix device with great graphics as a toy. It just demonstrates that they're ignorant of the device and maybe slightly threatened by it. And so when Mr. Hayek came out and used the word toy, everybody right away on their radar goes, "Oh, yes, he's using the same fearful feeling. He's feeling the same level of concern and sweat that the IT managers feel when Macintosh has come into the environment." So that was a bad idea. And second of all, as I mentioned while you were describing it, the Swiss watch industry has not kept up with Silicon Valley. And there's a massive amount of technology, infrastructure, software development tools, years and years of expertise in graphical user environments and Wi-Fi and communications and software development that Apple has gone through over the years. And we've seen it percolate from the Macintosh onto the iPhones and the iPads. And then we saw it percolate from the iPhone onto the watch. And we have that graceful partitioning of workload that serves us so well with the Apple Watch. But in order to do that, you've got to have a serious software industry And so I think that relegates Swatch to doing things that they know how to do and are capable of doing, which kind of pales in comparison, as you just described with credit cards, into what Apple has done. So the whole thing kind of smacks to me of somewhat of a desperation and unwarranted snark against Apple, calling it a toy, and I think it just created a bad feeling about the company. He could have handled it much more with more sophistication and business savviness.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is not... I mean, what we're seeing with the watch, and this is how I've always viewed the Apple Watch, is it's entering a category where there's a direct analog. There's a direct comparison to another product, to an existing product that is a, quote, dumb watch. And it's not. It's not supposed to supplant that. I view it as a completely new category. It's something new because people who have never worn watches are going to probably want to try a smartwatch, whether it's from Apple or whoever. And some existing watch wearers who wear it for the convenience and maybe for the style are going to migrate over. But there's a whole nother market where watches are a big thing and they spend tens of thousands of dollars on watches, as your customers do. And it's a totally different thing for them. It's about class and precision, and it's not about the features, because a feature of a watch is, you know, you're limited to basically your time and maybe a barometer, or, you know, maybe the phase of the moon or something. But it's not a feature-rich product. It's about status. It's about quality. It's about tradition, collection. And you've got the industry that is being threatened, reacting negatively. And I agree. I think that was a poor choice of words on Mr. Hayek's or Hayek's part. Mm-hmm. But I know watch guys. I'm not a watch guy. I'll admit that too. I'm just not a watch guy. But I know guys who are watch guys, and some of them are geeks, like our very own Dave Hamilton, and they will absolutely migrate over while still maintaining their love of the old watches. Some of them are, you know, aging businessmen who will never wear a smartwatch, and they scoff at this whole category, and that's fine because that's not for them. And that part of the market's always going to be there. It's just going to shrink because I don't think anybody's going to go from the smartwatch category to the traditional watch category who wasn't already going to go there. And I think a lot of people will come from that traditional category to the smartwatch category. And so it's fear, and it's a misunderstanding. And it's typical, like you said, John, of how people who are in industries who are at risk of disruption react when the walls start to come down. The only thing is, I don't think this is going to destroy the traditional watch industry. And I think, I mean, not only not destroy it, it's going to be robust and it's going to continue on. It's just not going to be as big as it was. It's going to lose that sort of middle road part. You know, the people who would spend $500 to $1,000 on a watch, it's probably going to lose them, but it's not going to lose the people who are spending $10,000, because if they can afford an Apple Watch edition for $10 or $17, they can still afford their classic, you know, whatever Rolex or whatever the top brands are, for the status and for the tradition and the collection and all that.
Sure. Yeah. And when the quartz movement watches came out, they did not destroy the older, more traditional mechanical watch market. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that market being destroyed by the smartwatches either. There will be people that jump camps because there's something in the other camp that entices them now. But for the most part, that mechanical watch market is still going to go on. The quartz movement watch will continue to go on. And we just have a new segment, which is the smartwatch part.
Right. And also the thing to keep in mind about the smartwatches is this segment is not going to be as large as the smartphone segment. Wearable computers may be someday when they're truly like, you know, pull them off a sticker and slap them on and it's a whole computer right there. But the smartwatch segment, virtually everyone can have a use for a smartphone. Not everyone can have a use or wants to have a use for a smartwatch. They don't like to wear it. They don't value what it brings to the table. They can do everything that the smartwatch can do on another device that they prefer to use. So that market's going to be smaller. It's not going to, it's right now it's artificial, or it's a by default limited to the size of the iPhone market because you need an iPhone. But I don't think it's ever going to reach the point where everybody who buys an iPhone buys a watch. We may get to the point where the watch is separate from the iPhone and it becomes its own thing because you don't need the iPhone. But even then, like, just some people just don't want to wear a device like that on their wrist.
Yep, there you go. All right. We are out of time. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's great to have you here. John, it's great to have you here as well.
My pleasure.
And listeners, when you need to make a new Apple product purchase, use the URL macobserver.com/Apple Store, because that's going to get you a special link that then gets us a little bit of a kickback. And then we take that money and use it to make sure that our podcasts stay on the air, which I think is a really good idea. There's also links to other companies there. Like if you need to make an Amazon purchase, we have a link there for that too. So macobserver.com/Apple Store. Listeners, thank you so much for being here today. We will see everyone again tomorrow.